This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Educators signed up to teach and facilitate learning. Instead, they're sometimes on the front lines of mass violence. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Yesterday, a shooter killed three students and three staff members at an elementary school in Nashville, Tennessee. So today, we wanted to hear how education advocates are responding to the all-too-common tragedy of mass shootings in schools. We talked to Nate Petrini, who's the executive director of High Jump, a program that helps middle school students excel. He's also a former CPS principal and teacher. We also spoke to Catherine Buitron-Bera. She's an education and diversity advocate, former school safety consultant, and volunteer with March 4th. What were your reactions when you heard that three students and three staff members had been killed in a mass shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville?
My heart breaks for the community. Covenant School, three nine-year-olds who just wanted to learn math and learn science and talk to their friends and hug their teachers, and teachers who just want to see students flourish, to be cut down. So deeply sad and deeply senseless. But unfortunately, it's not the first time that as a school leader and education leader that I've had to see that happen in schools and think about what it means for my students, my own children, kids in our city. A lot of reflection on all the pain.
Yeah, well, to the points you're making, according to the Gun Violence Archive, this is the 129th mass shooting in the U.S. so far this year.
Wow.
2023.
Yes. This is also the 16th K-12 mass shooting in the first 3 months of the year. And the month is not over yet. And I have to mention, the month is not over yet, because as we saw last month, it was 1 week, one after the other, after the other. And at this point, it's not a matter of when or if, it's a matter of when. These things are going to happen unless we change the legislation.
Nate, video footage, it's playing on all the channels right now. It shows the attacker shooting their way through the glass of one of the side doors. This was supposedly locked. You have run schools.
Mm-hmm.
An incident like this is a parent's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, I do not ever want to get this phone call. It also has to be an educator's worst nightmare, right? How do schools in Chicago prepare for active shooters?
Well, I can tell you how they prepare. I could tell you what we should be doing. So how we prepare certainly is that there are just these basic things that probably almost every school already does. Try and limit your entrances and your exits, have guests sign in, lock your doors, right? But like you said, as we saw yesterday, as we saw in Uvalde, as we saw in Parkland, if someone is determined to get in a school with a gun, they're going to get in with a gun. If someone is determined to inflict damage in a school, they're going to inflict damage.
I mean, this person had maps of the school.
Right.
So they were determined.
And so what we're talking about are things that we expect schools to do to limit the amount of victims, not eliminate the amount of victims. And these are the wrong questions to be asking. The question we should be asking is, how do we eliminate this, right? And so a principal is accountable and responsible for so much. To expect a principal and teachers to keep shooters out of their school, or expect a school system to keep shooters out of schools, it's not a realistic expectation.
The head of the school in this case lost her life.
She did.
She's one of the three.
And as that has happened in many other schools around the nation. And so principals are going through all of the things that you would expect them to do today, communicating out to their parents that they value their children, they want to keep their children safe, talking to their teachers who have fears and anxiety, talking to the students who have fears and anxiety, But those are really narrow and short responses that are all that we can do the next day. And so people are going through those exercises and those motions, but if we expect them to actually stop school shootings, that's not what's going to happen.
Catherine, you worked as a school safety consultant, right? Yes. So what's your reaction to that? A shooter just making their way through a door that's supposed to be locked?
I am not surprised. As a school safety consultant, you walk through the schools, you make a plan with the school district on how to deter someone to not go into the building. But when you have an assault weapon, you can shoot your way inside. Mm-hmm. You can use a different door. Somebody inside can let you in. And the bottom line is, once you are inside with an assault weapon, you are not going for one or two or three people. These weapons are weapons of mass destruction. These weapons are designed to take as many lives possible in minutes. They're effective in killing. And you can put metal detectors, you can put x-ray machines, you can have one entryway. They are still able to make their way inside mm-hmm. because of the weapons that they carry.
And you focused on entrances, right?
Yes, that
was part of your work.
That was my work. I focused on entrances. I also walked through the lockdown drills with some of the school districts that mm-hmm. I work with. And a lockdown drill, it's not effective when you have a group of children, regardless of the age, just hide and run away from an assault weapon that is going to not only kill them, but it's going to liquefy their organs. And how do you run away from that? I'm a parent. How difficult it was for me and for every single parent out there to drop off their kids in a school this morning.
Yeah. Every single time this happens,
yes,
it's very difficult for me to watch mine are teens. It's very difficult for me to watch them walk out the door.
Yes. And even as an expert on the field, I have conversations with my kids. How do your lockdown drills work? What are you guys doing here and there? What is your experience? It's heartbreaking. The state of Illinois requires 3 drills per year per school. They're not as effective to begin with because of time constraints. So not everybody's going through every step. Not everybody's pushing the desks and the chairs or covering the windows. That is a big problem right there. Even if you go through all of these steps, like I said, the moment that assault weapon is inside of the school,
it's over.
That's it. It's over.
Nate, you were actually the principal at Hawthorne Scholastic Academy in Lakeview on December 14th, 2012. Yeah. This is the day of the massacre that we know at Sandy Hook in Connecticut. Still, the worst mass shooting at an elementary or high school in U.S. history. What did you learn that day?
Oh, gosh. You know, I remember that day really, really clearly. A teacher came into my office while I was working with just panic on her face and tears in her eyes and asked me if I saw what had happened, and I hadn't. And I pulled up the news and saw. And the rest of the day was filled with this look that I got from her, that I got from every teacher, that I got from every parent of like, what are we going to do about this? And not like in a rhetorical way. Like they wanted to know what I was going to do about it, right?
You're the principal.
I'm the principal.
You've got to have the answers.
And I didn't have them, but I prioritized communication. I did those things that I mentioned earlier, made sure that we were having one entrance and exit. People were signing in, but it didn't change the fact that for every day thereafter, every time I sat in the hall in my school to just talk to students, talk to teachers, and I would feel the pulse of my school, just a normal routine that I had as I would see students and parents and teachers sort of weave in and out of the hallway, I would, to the day, every day, think about what if the next person who comes around that corner mm-hmm. has a gun? What would I do? What should I do? And I carried that every day, and I imagine so did the teachers and the kids. So really what I learned was that—
What did you think? What would you do? I'm curious. What was rolling through your mind as your way to, you know, to keep yourself and others safe?
You know, it was always just a very quick, I'm going to run and shut every door that I can and do everything that I can to delay until we hope that someone gets here. But as Catherine said, as your other guests have said, is it's just an attempt to minimize something that shouldn't ever be happening in the first place. And and I would say that like the mental toll that that played on me was probably dramatically smaller than it was on five-year-olds who are in our buildings. And that's one of the other things to remember is that that day at Sandy Hook, too, not that any one life has more value than another, but these were 6 and 7-year-olds, too. And so this reality that we're asking people to live in, it's not just Catherine and me and you who have to live in it when we send our children to school, but it's the actual children who have no choice but to confront this thing every day of, is today the day? Am I safe in this place? Instead of focusing on what school is meant to be for kids.
I, as a parent, am just, I'm rattled. I mean, just hearing Catherine talk a moment ago about the impact of a bullet from one of these weapons on a kid, on a small body.
Yesterday, the Washington Post had actually, earlier in the day, made public two cases of two different students that were killed by an assault weapon. This came hours before the shooting in Nashville. For anyone who saw it, and if you haven't, please make sure you go and look for that information. For anyone who has heard the hearings at the Senate from the parents who've lost children, you can hear the devastation that their bodies went through and the devastation thereafter for their families to recognize their bodies. To how do you move on from that? You can't. When it comes to small kids, like Nate was saying, when you have a classroom, you don't have – every kid is so different from each other. You don't have one classroom with 10 kids and two teachers. The reality of most classrooms is at least 20 kids per teacher. And you have kids that are neurodiverse. You have kids with mobility issues. What happens to those kids when a shooter is in the building? Even during a lockdown drill, these kids have a harder time moving on after the lockdown drill than their peers. For younger kids, they have a really hard time with their emotions and how they can accept and comprehend transitions after a drill. Now, can you imagine the fear and the terror that goes through them if there's a shooter?
I cannot.
And how do you tell your kids, be quiet? Because that's the first thing. Everybody knows, be quiet, run and hide.
Hide. Yeah.
How do you stay quiet in a classroom full of young children? And how do you keep, as a teacher, all of those kids safe?
Chicago Public School CEO Pedro Martinez sent out a note to CPS parents. In part, it reads, our approach is grounded in proactively providing for the physical and emotional safety of our students and creating a culture that is centered on building trusting relationships between students and staff. We are also fully committed to meeting the social and emotional needs of our school communities. In the wake of the tragedy in Nashville, we'll encourage staff to use our the day after guidance, which creates a safe space for students to voice their concerns and to speak openly about their feelings. What should principals and school superintendents be doing, Nate, on the day after the school shooting?
Yeah, well, hopefully those principals have been working really hard to build trusting relationships between students and staff and then doing exactly as CEO Martinez said, pausing what's been happening in instruction and in a developmentally appropriate way, which I hope those tools provide guidance for, giving teachers the language and the resources to talk to students and listen to what they're saying and then have a healing-centered path forward for those young people. You know, at High Jump, we focus a lot on equipping students with the language to explain and express how they are feeling and the understanding of the fact that this is a journey for all of us and we're going to wrestle with trauma and we're going to wrestle with difficult times in our life and to have the trusting adult that's going to help shepherd you through that. So we do a lot of that at High Jump and those are best practices
that social emotional learning
is critical to be able to identify your emotions, say it out loud, try and understand why you're feeling that way and know that it's okay. You're not alone on this journey and that there are other people here with you. And I hope that's what that framework is doing. Chicago Public Schools has put a lot of time and energy and money into social-emotional learning, which is important and is critical. And hopefully all that training helps the wonderful and amazing teachers and administrators doing that work today.
As we mentioned at the top, Catherine, the advocacy organization that you're with, March 4th, it was founded after the mass shooting in Highland Park last July. Now, we saw legislation like the Protect Illinois Communities Act, which was introduced since Highland Park. So what would you say advocates from Nashville can learn from the process that you all dealt with?
People at Nashville, advocates at Nashville, and actually parents, teachers, everyone everywhere can learn from this. You take your frustration, your feelings, your anger, and put them into action. A big deal of what March 4th does, we educate voters on how to communicate with their officials, how to do actionable items the day of, the day after, and on the weeks to come. Mm-hmm. We are not just ourselves doing the work. We are doing the work with every single one of our followers. And those followers bring more followers. We are getting louder every day. Every time there's a shooting, we restart the education process of pick up your phone and call your senators. This is what you can do online. This is what you can do through your phone at the state level, at the federal level. And we want to get all of the advocates everywhere, all of the community that works together, we're all on the same page, and we're all moving in the same direction. March 4th is a piece of this, and our goal is one, ban assault weapons. One of the things that we are working really hard is we also have a Spanish account because we want to make sure we're getting our point across not only to the English-speaking voters but also to the Latinx community, making sure that every parent who might not be comfortable or know how to knows what are the next steps.
Yeah.
And
very
it is
important.
A process where even teenagers are learning from that. I have teenagers, and every day, this is what you have to do, and this is how it works.
Oh, yeah. Well, real quick, just leave us with this. How can parents and survivors of Nashville, how can they work towards change?
Yeah, well, I'm certainly not an advocate in the sense that Catherine is. I think it's just have really clear communications with their school and their school district about what kind of resources they want to see and in their school and what kind of resources they don't want to see. Obviously, this is going to steer us towards conversations about metal detectors and armed guards in schools, things that we know don't work to prevent school shootings. Right. And so I think it's just be really cautious that we don't jump to solutions like that aren't actually solutions, that divert resources from classrooms and into things that actually increase the likelihood that kids are re-traumatized, that students come into contact with law enforcement in ways that they shouldn't be. So just being cautious and mindful of that, and at the same time giving your teachers and your admins space to know that they can support your kid, and remembering that as parents, we are scared and worried about our students going to school. Teachers and admin are scared to be in there sometimes.
Yeah.
And so encourage them and support them. And,
that's the reality.
Hope it doesn't happen again.
We've been talking with Nate Petrini of High Jump and Catherine Buitron-Bera of March 4th. Thank you both.
Thank you, Sasha Ann.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Michael Liptrot and edited by Stephanie Kim. That's all for today. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll check back in tomorrow.